The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world. To the world. To the world.
Blake Radio.
Hello, this is Melvin Williams, and I'm hosting The Healing with Dr. Daniels today. So how are you, Dr. Daniels?
Oh, pretty good, Melvin. Great to be here.
That's good. And today's topic is the diabetes debacle, correct?
Yep, that's it, the diabetes debacle.
All right, well, let us know a little bit about the diabetes debacle, if you don't mind.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, diabetes is a pretty big deal in the United States. These days, a lot of people have diabetes. It, you know, ranks right up there behind heart disease as a cause of death. So today, I want to talk about diabetes and how, you know, diabetes may be a cause of death, and really our therapies may actually be contributing to that. So first thing to understand is what is diabetes? And diabetes, defined by the medical profession, is a fasting blood sugar of 126 or more on two separate occasions, or a blood sugar of 200 random or 2 hours after eating. And so this is actually a pretty simple laboratory definition, but also just a definition of symptoms. Usually people suspect they have it or they probably have it if they are very, very thirsty, they drink a lot, and they pee a lot. And so these are ways you can tell that that might be what you have. The next definition we need to know is what's a debacle. Well, a debacle is a total and often ludicrous failure, just such an absolute total and complete failure. And I was told in medical school the reason our diabetics weren't getting better is because they were noncompliant. They didn't do what we told them to do. And that a lot of medical schools also, the patients that give students to take care of are often very poor. And so what they tell us is, well, these are poor people, and they're not like the people you're going to be taking care of. The people that you're going to care for are going to have more money, they're going to be more compliant, and you're going to get much, much better results. So these poor results that we are seeing in medical school really are not representative at all of what you're going to see when you get out there. And when I entered practice, for the first time on my own, I was at an Indian reservation. While the patients were poor, they had excellent concierge medical service. In other words, any drug I prescribed, not only did they get their insulin, but it was drawn up in syringes to make sure they got just the right dose. They were given written instructions. If they couldn't read, we would deputize somebody to read for them and to go to their home and make sure they got all the drugs on time. So noncompliance was really not an issue. And still, I noticed that the clinical results were extremely, extremely poor. And it wasn't until I got into my own private practice and I said, you know what, this just is not working. And today, what I like to talk to people about, is I'm sure a lot of people in the audience have been noticed that things probably weren't working or as well as they thought. And maybe give people some insight into that.
All right, sounds great. Let's take a quick, for those who are joining us, you're listening to the Blake Radio, and this is Healing with Dr. Daniels, and the topic for today is the diabetes debacle. Okay, Dr. Daniels, can you give us a little bit about the anatomy of the diabetes?
Yes, we're taught in medical school that diabetes is a disease of the pancreas. And the pancreas, of course, produces insulin. And really nothing could be further from the truth. It turns out there's only one organ in the body designed to raise and lower blood sugar, and that's the liver. So it's the liver, it's the job of the liver to soak up any sugar that might be in excess circulating, convert it into storage form called glycogen, and then release it whenever it's needed. This is why you can eat once a day or three times a day. You don't have to eat continuously because the liver, you eat, the liver sucks up all the sugar, and then between meals it releases the sugar in a nice steady stream. So it's really primarily a disease of the liver. This is type 2 diabetes, by the way, type 2, the liver, which is not responding when the pancreas is sending the insulin. And actually, the pancreas in type 2 diabetes is producing an exceptional amount of insulin, far more insulin than a non-diabetic person has. So type 2 diabetes is absolutely not a disease of the pancreas. Now, I would have to say, disclaimer, this is my personal opinion, this is my interpretation of the data. The data is that the pancreas is producing an exceptional amount of insulin. So to say the insulin, the pancreas is not producing enough insulin or not doing its job in type 2 diabetes, it's really, in my opinion, not accurate. So it's a disease of the liver. Then it's a disease also of the brain and the muscles, because they are not able to absorb, soak up, or use the glucose. So actually, it's not a disease of the pancreas. So obviously, if it's not a disease of the pancreas, and you focus all therapy on the pancreas, and of course you can't possibly cure the disease, which is what we've seen, is that the incidence of diabetes is not falling, and people who have diabetes are not getting rid of the disease.
Okay. Now, could you give us a little bit about the physiology of diabetes?
Yeah, well, every single organ has a job to do, and physiology simply talks about what each organ is supposed to be doing. And simple as small intestine in diabetes is supposed to be absorbing the sugar. It's supposed to be absorbing sugar at a nice, slow, steady rate, at a slow enough rate where the liver can keep up. And in diabetes, that's not the case at all. The sugar just rushes right in, overwhelms the liver, and the liver can't filter the sugar out of the blood. The colon has also got an issue, because in the colon, there's supposed to have a lot of very good bacteria, and it's their job to eat up any excess sugar. And in exchange for this sugar, they produce enzymes and nutrients that the human body needs. Whereas in the diabetic, there's something called a dysbiosis. That means that the good bacteria in the colon are not there, and that there's bacteria that are there, but they're not doing their job. And then, of course, as we mentioned before, it's a disease of the liver, which can't soak up and release the sugar like it's supposed to. It's also a disease of the kidney, because the kidneys are the backup to the liver. And it's their job to dump any sugar through the urine the liver has failed to remove. And so in diabetes, the kidneys are not able to dump enough sugar fast enough to keep the blood sugar normal. And it's also a disease of the lungs, because in diabetes, the blood pH is not correct, so the lungs can't pull carbon dioxide out of the blood and maintain a normal pH. And, of course, the brain can't do its job because it can't get any glucose in. And so this really is a huge total global failure. And this is why by the time a person gets diabetes, they're usually not in very good health. So most people who have diabetes, they've had something else go wrong first. Maybe they have hypertension, maybe they have arthritis, maybe they have fatigue, weakness, but it's not the first medical problem that they have.
Okay. Now, as far as the pathophysiology of diabetes, could you explain that to us?
Well, pathophysiology means there's not enough, since there's not enough minerals or vitamins, water or fiber, the glucose accumulates in the blood. And the pancreas then says, wait a minute, there's too much sugar around. And it says, well, I better tell that liver to just get to work. And it puts out more insulin. And basically, it's like a wife nagging her husband saying, you know, I told you to take out the trash, you didn't take out the trash, I'm really upset, and you better get to work. So, of course, the liver, like any good husband, says, well, I would do it if I could. And the liver says, I can't do it. And the pancreas then reduces more and more insulin. The liver says, no, I can't do it, I can't do it. And the liver is not going to do it because actually it can't, because it has certain biochemical limitations. Those limitations are a diet that doesn't have enough minerals. The minerals are the cofactors needed for the liver to absorb the sugar. It doesn't have enough vitamins, vitamin D, vitamin C, the liver needs in order to do its job. It doesn't have enough water. And a lot of diabetics, just drinking one or two glasses of water could drop their blood sugar 20 to 50 points. And again, also the diet is lacking in fiber. And the fiber is the slow release mechanism that would allow the sugar to be absorbed at a slow enough rate so that the liver could keep up and do its job. And then it would allow the body to transport the glucose, to store it, to retrieve it, and also it would allow the brain and the muscles to burn the glucose as fuel. But without these cofactors, none of this can happen. And so you have glucose everywhere. The body is starving. You've got the pancreas frantically releasing insulin, making the person fatter and fatter and fatter, driving them to be hungrier and hungrier and eat more. And so it's this incredible cycle. It just gets worse and worse and worse. You know, I think that, is there a number that our guests can reach us at if they want to call in?
Yes, and that number, for those who are listening, is 914-338-0695. Again, that number is 914-338-0695. And we'll take a quick break to say, those who have just joined us, you're listening to The Blake Radio, and this is Healing with Dr. Daniels. And the title of today's show is The Diabetes Debacle. And if you want to get more information, please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your risks of type 2 medicine. Okay. And once again, I guess we can go to the therapeutic agents for diabetes.
And that's very interesting, because the therapy of diabetes represents the doctor's attempt to extend a strategy the body has already applied and failed at. So the body has already applied the strategy of producing even more insulin, pressuring the liver, pressuring the muscles to take in glucose that they are in no way prepared to handle. Excuse me. So the liver is not able to change the glucose into glycogen. The muscles are not able to chop it up into its pieces and release energy from it. But because of the high insulin being released, they're forced to absorb and soak up this insulin and literally become storage devices instead of the usual functioning. So in other words, a diabetic who's taking insulin therapy or taking therapy for his diabetes is going to have muscles that are bigger but are weaker. And so all of his organs are going to be bigger because they're storing glucose, but they're going to be weaker because they can't access that energy or release it. And of course, you know, incredible weight gain happens as a result of this. And there's lots of treatment agents. I think one thing about diabetes that's really you need to focus on is, why are we treating it? Why bother to treat diabetes? And one thing that's never mentioned is life expectancy. Everyone knows that diabetics just don't live as long as healthy people do. And so the question is, well, if we treat these diabetics with pills, with insulin shots, with really everything at our medical disposal, how does it influence their life expectancy? It turns out that actually, a study was done in Denmark. They took several thousand diabetics, treated them over a period of 14 years. What they found was untreated diabetics, two groups, untreated and treated. The untreated diabetics died at a rate of 23% over a 14-year period. The treated diabetics died at a rate of 21% over a 14-year period. In other words, 2% of people who would have died did not die because they were treated with diabetic medicine. If you do the math, you know, 21%, 23% versus 2%, divide that by 14, take your reciprocal. It's basically one person, for every 714 people who submitted to diabetic therapy, only one life was saved every year. Now, if we took this kind of success rate and applied it to something like paying rent, that would mean that 714 people will have to pay rent for a year before one person got to occupy the apartment for a month. And that's really an unacceptable effectiveness odds. Another way of looking at it is one person would have to take diabetes medicine for 714 years before they experience benefit, on average. Now, even a healthy person is unlikely to live 714 years. In other words, long enough to experience the life-enhancing or life-giving benefits of diabetic medicine.
Okay. And once again, those who are listening, you can call in. That number is 914-338-0695 and may ask Dr. Daniel some questions. As far as those goals for therapy, what are some goals for therapy?
Well, there are many goals for therapy, and the goals that we are taught for therapy are reduction of heart attack, reduction of stroke, reduction of diabetic retinopathy, and reduction of peripheral vascular disease. These are, of course, very very laudable goals. However, one issue with this, and another goal for therapy is control of blood sugar. But we have actually diabetes medications like Actos, for example, and Novolog. Actos is a pill. Novolog is an injectable insulin that actually create these problems. And this is a huge issue when you have an illness as devastating as diabetes, and the drugs that are used to treat this illness actually make the illness worse, make the blood sugar worse. Another interesting thing about diabetes, diabetes is monitored by something called hemoglobin A1C. And hemoglobin A1C is a measure of the hemoglobin floating around the body that has glucose or sugar attached to it. And a normal person, anywhere from 4 to 6% of these hemoglobin molecules have sugar attached to them. In a diabetic, that number is 6.5% or higher. But it turns out that if you lower a person's hemoglobin A1C to 7.4, then that gives them their maximal benefit. If you lower it any more than that, you actually create what you might want to call excess death. So you actually have increased death or decreased survival in people who are taking medication for their diabetes but have a hemoglobin A1C that's less than 7.1 it is. So 7.1 on down, the person is actually harming themselves, decreasing their life expectancy, and creating a clinical outcome that is worse than the diabetes itself. And so that's really actually shocking because something called tight control has been proposed in the United States for many, many years, and people were actually following this, and this is something that's been used, especially in treating children and adolescents who are type 2 diabetics. Well, I could give you an example of a patient I had. I used to be the medical director at a detention center. And so this one young lady came in. She's 15 years old. And she was a difficult individual. She was verbally very abusive. She was very difficult, very hostile, and extremely, extremely vocal. Curiously, she weighed 150 pounds. She was taking 130 units of insulin, and her blood sugars were not really that well controlled at about 130. And so when she came in, I took a look at this, and she was being treated by the University Hospital Pediatric Diabetes Department. In fact, they were so high status, they didn't even call themselves Diabetes Department. They called themselves the endocrinology department. So this is the endocrinology department that was treating this individual. So I made up my mind that her therapy actually, you know, wasn't getting that great a result, so why not go ahead and change it? So I told her, look, that's what we're going to do. We're going to change your diet a bit. You know, yeah, no cookies or snacks or candy or whatever. If you want fresh fruit, fine. Ask for fresh fruit, we'll give it to you. And you have mandatory gym. You have to go to gym. Every time it's time for gym, you have to show up. And when it's not time for gym and you have free time, you are to go to the gym. If you don't want to do anything, it's fine, but you've got to go. And what happened over time was her weight decreased. She actually started getting up and walking around the gym. Then she started running around the gym. And her insulin requirements decreased, her blood sugar decreased, and her weight decreased. When her insulin requirements got down to around 60 units down from 130, I actually started getting hostile and irate letters from the endocrinology unit saying they totally disagreed with my therapy, that I was being overly restrictive with her diet, and this is absolutely the wrong way to go because her type of diabetes is a very special kind of diabetes, and this is just unacceptable. This is not the right way to go. So since I was the medical director of the prison, I said, well, thank you very much. I appreciate your input, and kept doing what I was doing. And over time, what happened was her insulin requirement dropped down to a whopping 5 units of insulin. She lost 30 pounds. She actually became rather charming and witty and pleasant. And she was discharged from the detention center at that point. And so I don't know what happened to her with her 5 units. I can only hope that she continued what she was doing and ended up totally free of her diabetes. But the endocrinology department at the university revised her diagnosis from type 1 to type 1.5 diabetes. And they asked me if I would like to continue to take care of her diabetes under their supervision. So, of course, I declined. I said, look, you guys are the experts. You can take over from here. And, you know, I'm happy to have been able to help you out. But this is what is happening with the standard of care. With the standard of care, people are being put on very high doses of insulin. It's causing them to gain weight, making their diabetes actually worse, and literally creating the disease that supposedly they're trying to cure or trying to remedy. And so this is a truly a debacle where people who submit to therapy, in many cases, are shortening their lives. Many cases are creating their own diabetic retinopathy, and it's really a tragedy.
Okay. And for those who are joining us again, you're listening to the Blake Radio, and this is Healing with Dr. Daniels. And today's topic is the diabetes debacle. And for those who want to get more information, you can visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out, and you can actually find out what your risk for orthobiome medicine is. Dr. Daniels, you had talked to us about the goal of therapy. Could you talk to us about the type of agents as far as pills or insulin shots go?
Yes, that's very, very important. I think a lot of people don't really know what they are putting in their mouths, and they don't know what they are injecting. And most of the insulin nowadays is actually genetically modified. So the same procedure that's used to genetically modify our corn and our soybeans is what is used to genetically modify organisms such as E. coli or yeast. These organisms are genetically modified. They produce lots and lots and lots of insulin because of the genetic modification. They are then sacrificed, broken open, and the insulin is harvested. And so this genetically modified insulin actually has been found to cause diabetic retinopathy, to cause the complications of diabetes that supposedly we are trying to fix. In fact, the E. coli organism, which is used to manufacture this insulin, human insulin example, is the main ingredient in human feces. So when you have a bowel movement, one-third of what comes out of you is E. coli. And this is the main substrate ingredient, starting ingredient, for the manufacture of insulin. And when you are basically shooting the shit or injecting a byproduct of shit into your body, it you almost don't even have to wonder why you're not getting better. And so many people are, you know, unknowingly injecting a genetically modified substance and at the same time protesting the presence of genetically modified organisms or GMO food in their food system. So this is something I think really needs to be looked at in terms of diabetic therapy, the presence of genetically modified substances, what they're really doing, and this is really a rational way to treat diabetes. The other thing to look at, again, is the pills. Most of the diabetic pills work through paralyzing the liver and impairing its ability to release glucagon or its ability to release sugar. Now, this is a problem because the liver does so many different things. These pills don't just strategically stop one process, but stop many processes. And so this, again, leaves the person vulnerable to many long-term effects. Now, another angle that's not often talked about is there's something called disease progression. And what I mean by this is a person will often come to a doctor with hypertension and then, over a period of months or years, develop diabetes. And in medical school, I was taught that this is just a natural progression of illness. That when you have a hypertensive, over the time, as they age, their body becomes more debilitated and they will often develop diabetes. And this seemed pretty plausible to me. But then I started doing a little bit of reading, and there's this book called the PDR. Everyone knows the PDR. There's a special book of the PDR, edition of the PDR, called Drug Interactions and Side Effects. And if you look under diabetes, you'll find something very shocking, which is that many blood pressure medications and drugs given for heart disease also cause diabetes. And this may actually be the root cause of why so many people with high blood pressure progress on to diabetes. Again, the doctors, we are taught that this is a natural progression, that people who have hypertension are at increased risk of diabetes when actually the doctor may be giving them diabetes. And I'd also like to point out that the cholesterol medicines, such as Zocor and Tricor, cause diabetes. When you take a look at Zocor, and you see that 2.4% of everyone who takes Zocor is going to get diabetes, that's pretty shocking. And so our medical programs to prevent one disease are actually causing another disease. And then hypertensive medications such as beta blockers, ACE inhibitors, water pills also contribute to diabetes. And as I said, this is really, I won't say, you could say, yeah, criminal. I mean, it's murder. When you think that when you take someone in who's a non-diabetic and convert them to a diabetic, and their death rate's going to go from 7% over a 14-year period to 23%, then that's a substantial amount of harm that you're doing. Literally, you're condemning at least 2% of these people, somewhere close to 2%, 1 to 2% per year, to death, simply because you treated their hypertension and convert them to a hypertensive diabetic. And this is the kind of therapy that's going on, and this is actually the standard of care. And any doctor who decided he was not going to do this, that he was not going to be a party to this carnage, this disease creation, to this medical homicide, would be disciplined for not adhering to the standard of care. And so that's really amazing.
Okay.
Also, this will give everybody that's listening a chance to ask questions to Dr. Daniels. If you want to ask Dr. Daniels a question, please call 914-338-0695. Again, that's 914-338-0695. And also, you can find out more information for Dr. Daniels at vitalitycapsules.com/find out. You can actually find out your risk for murder by medicine. Dr. Daniels, could you give us some case studies that involve some of the information that you've been giving us?
Yes. There's a couple of attitudes about diabetes. One is that people wonder, well, how high a blood sugar is too high? Of course, you have to ask, well, too high for what? And, of course, the answer is, well, too high to live. Now, if we're talking about type 2 diabetics, that's what we're talking about, type 2 diabetics, I've seen blood pressures, I mean blood sugars rather, well over 1,000. In terms of the office, I've cared for patients with blood sugars as high as 900 without needing to hospitalize them. But certainly if your blood sugar is less than 550 and you feel fine, you can probably do just fine drinking some water at home. Now, again, disclaimer, this is not medical advice. Different people are different. Any way that you decide to use this information, you have to accept full responsibility for that. I'm in no way practicing medicine or attempting to treat, diagnose, or cure any illness. And so this patient came into the office with a blood sugar of 900. He walked, he talked, he was breathing. I said, look, I'll tell you what we'll do. Your blood sugar on this blood sugar meter says it's too high to measure. So I said, I can guess then that your blood sugar is probably over 500. If you'll do everything I tell you, then you can go home, we'll see you back tomorrow, we'll, you know, take care of this. And just because I'd gone to medical school and I had a prescription pass, so you know what, why don't you take 10 units of insulin just in case? And just gave him some directions and drinking some water, and it turns out that when you have a high blood sugar, salt water brings it down very, very quickly, almost as fast as, faster than insulin. And so the person went home, did what he was told, came back the next day. Sure enough, blood sugar was down to 700. And I said, great, let's stop that insulin. And continued with his salt water and little dietary adjustments. And within about a week, blood sugar was absolutely normal, down to 96. Now, this points out the fact that diabetes, you know, like I say, it's a metabolic condition, but very precisely, it's simply a deficiency of water, salt, minerals, vitamins, and enzymes. In this case, because I didn't want to spend all the trouble of filling out paperwork and admitting him to the hospital, then probably, again, in my experience, he wouldn't have gotten better. I figured, why not adjust his diet to add those things back to his diet? And did that, and that worked out very well. And actually, he did fine for several years. And I later heard that he went back to eating some things he shouldn't have. And I was no longer practicing medicine, and he ended up taking a pill of some sort. But again, just that one time changing his diet, he was able to be just fine for several years. Another patient that I saw was, I was only 2 years out of medical school, so I believed absolutely everything that I heard in medical school. And this person, I had a lot of history because it was on the Indian reservation, so everybody knew everybody, it was better than surveillance cameras, so I had all kinds of information sources to tell me exactly what happened, so I wasn't totally reliant on the patient. But the night before, he had quite a bit to drink. And that morning, he went to the emergency room. His blood sugar tested about 550. And for some reason, unbeknownst to me, they sent him to my office and said, oh, we don't need to admit you. Go see your doctor. So he came to my office, and I figured, well, he's walking, he's talking. The emergency room sent him here. And I looked at his chart, and sure enough, I had already had him on diabetes pills. So we sat down and had a heart-to-heart talk. And I said, well, what do you say you cut back the alcohol? And he kind of said, well, okay, he'd cut it back. And I looked at these pills he was on. I said, well, you know, I don't think we need to adjust your pills. And just with that, his blood sugar went down from 550 to 250. And this particular individual, it was not a good idea to attempt type control because of his drinking habit. He would have probably killed himself. But these are some examples of how you get a tremendous amount of control and a tremendous amount of results and improvement without resorting to our traditional diabetic medication. Another thing I'd like to talk about, people often don't realize, is whether you're taking diabetes pills or insulin, people are taught or trained to check their blood sugar. I'm not saying they should or should not check their blood sugar, but I am saying that whenever you check your blood sugar, you're stabbing yourself, you're piercing the skin, and you're creating an entry for bacteria. And even if you wipe your skin very well before you pierce it, after you take your blood sugar and you resume using your hands and your fingers, bacteria can get back in there, and these bacteria compromise the immune system, enter the blood, enter the skin, and over time cause immunocompromise. So the practice of injecting the skin repeatedly with a needle means that organisms that are ordinarily on the skin, that live there every day, like staph, for example, they find their way into the skin through these multiple puncture holes. And so it may be that our very therapy for diabetes, our method of testing blood sugar, is what is causing a lot of diabetic compromise of the immune system and susceptibility to infections of all kinds. So it's really, diabetes is such a dangerous thing for diabetics who are treating their diabetes with really medications of any kind. And so another thing to talk about, since we have a few more minutes, is if a person decides that they're not really open to using drugs or pills or insulin, then really what can they do? And there actually is a whole lot that's known about that.
Okay, once again, we'll take a quick station break. For those who are joining us, you're listening to the Blake Radio. This is Healing with Dr. Daniels, and the title of today's show is the Diabetes Debacle. And also, if you have questions, you can call in at 914-338-0695. If you would like to get more information from Dr. Daniels, please visit vitalitycapsules.com/findout. Yes, they're murdered by medicine. Now, Dr. Daniels, is there any new research you can talk about as far as cures for diabetes or therapy for diabetes?
Yes, actually quite a bit of research has been done, mostly outside the United States and mostly by non-physicians. And it turns out that there are a lot of things in the American diet that are responsible for contributing to the increase in diabetes. And some people talk about raw food versus cooked food, but actually it's processed food versus unprocessed food. And so when the food is processed, that means, in a nutshell, that the minerals, the water, vitamins and enzymes needed by the body to properly metabolize glucose are actually absent from the food. And so when the food is processed, for example, with white sugar, it's an excellent example, you have something called a cane plant, which is a really fibrous stalk. So first the juice is squeezed out of the cane plant. All right, now you have some juice, the fiber has been removed, so you no longer have a slow release system. Now this juice is filled with trace minerals with calcium and magnesium, vanadium and iron and all kinds of really potassium, just wonderful, wonderful nutrients, in addition, of course, to sugar. Then all these nutrients are removed. Well, now you've got sugar water. And then, finally, the water is removed, and you have crystalline white sugar. And so in the process of making the sugar, every single thing that's removed, if added back, literally would have the power to cure diabetes. And in cultures where the sugar cane is grown, and actually the locals are not allowed to eat, or not allowed to purchase the white sugar because it's for export only. It's a very high price for that. And they eat the juice from the sugar cane, and they don't have diabetes. And so processed food. So whether the processed food is raw or whether it's cooked, processed food is the issue. For example, if you're on a raw food diet, you can actually still become diabetic. Why? Eating dehydrated foods. Again, food has been processed, but the water's been removed, and then the body can't properly metabolize it, basically for lack of water. So processed foods are really the key. And so one example of a processed food is white sugar. Another example is white flour. The way the white flour becomes white is not only is it ground up, but the bran and the fiber are removed from it, and the nutrients as well. Another example of processed food is frozen dinners. So these are cases where the food has been harvested, it's been chopped, it's been prepared, it's been partially cooked, then it's been stored for a long period of time, and then it gets cooked again a second time when you eat it. And so I would tell anyone not to, especially if you're diabetic, not to cook food a second time. And so that means basically that you're not going to buy a dinner on Monday and reheat it or cook it on Tuesday or Wednesday. So reheated food, food that has nutrients removed and water removed. And then another thing is fried foods. When foods are fried, you'll take the food and put it in the oil and start frying it. You'll see the smoke coming up out of the frying vessel. And that smoke is actually water. It's moisture. And so what happens then is the food is overly dried, and the body becomes severely dehydrated, and the body relies on water. It's like a river to as a transport mechanism. And so when the sugar is introduced in such a dried form, in the method of, say, French fries, you've got the grease, you've got the crunchiness, you've got the dried stuff, then you kind of have a setup there for diabetes. So adjusting a diet is number one, so changing the food that you eat. And so the rule of thumb is, when you go to the store, the only thing you buy from the store is fruits, vegetables, dried beans, and some dried rice or quinoa or millet or amaranth or buckwheat or other type of grain. So that's it. That's the whole shopping list. And then when you come home, if you want to cook it and you eat it. And that's pretty much the size of it. And so if people would say, okay, I'm going to buy stuff from the store and cook it myself, and if I don't have time to cook it, I can always just eat it raw. And that's the size of it. Now, meat is very interesting. The research has done has shown that if you take 100 people who are diabetic meat eaters and you have them all give up meat, so 100 people stop eating meat, half of them, 50%, will no longer have diabetes. Now, that is a cure rate of 1 in 2. So in other words, 2 people have to embark on this therapy in order for one person to benefit. That's a much better odds than the present diabetic therapy, where 714 people would need to embark on this therapy in order for one person to benefit. So in medical terms, an NNT, which is members needed to treat of 2, is a very small number needed to treat in order to have one person benefit. In fact, that's just totally unheard of. in doing research, I've found that this new concept of numbers need to treat, they feel an NNT of 40 is just why that's just hunky-dory. They think it's okay to have to treat 40 people in order for one person to improve or experience benefits. Well, the dietary change, like just becoming a vegetarian, and that's like not even necessarily the best of vegetarians, just become vegetarian, one in every two diabetics would just no longer be diabetic. And so that's a huge benefit. And people can also visit my website, vitalitycapsules.com, and I have recipes there, recipe books, and they're totally vegetarian, totally vegan. And so that is a big help. So that's been known. Next thing is exercise. A lot of people on the Internet are going to try and sell you a lot of exercise programs, even off the Internet. People want to sell you gym memberships. Totally unnecessary. A lot of research has been done on diabetes, and they've actually got it down to how much exercise and what kind is needed to cure diabetes. And so for most people, the dose is 30 minutes a day. So you just put on a pair of sneakers and walk for 30 minutes. You don't have to walk. It doesn't matter if you walk fast or slow. Just 30 minutes. And some people get so enthusiastic after doing 30 minutes, they decide they want to do 60 minutes. That's fine. No problem. The only thing to realize is as you get better, you need to cut back your medicine. And that's something that's really, really important because people can get into a lot of trouble when they're taking too much medicine. And as we talked about before, with diabetes, you're better off taking not quite so much medicine than too much medicine. Another emerging cause of death among diabetics is hypoglycemia, so blood sugar going too low. And that's a fancy word for you're overdosing your medicine. So a person basically took an overdose of their insulin medicine, whether it was their pills or whether it was their insulin, they literally overdosed themselves. And this is becoming a big cause of harm, death, and damage among diabetics. Now, this is portrayed to diabetics as just a complication of the disease. No, it's not a complication of the disease. A diabetic who's not taking insulin, who's not taking any medical therapy, does not get a low blood sugar. The only way to get it is to take medication. So this is actually a side effect which has wrongly been attributed to the disease itself. So changing your diet is huge. Walking, again, 30 minutes a day is a dose, is huge. And next is drinking water. And for a diabetic, again, drinking water is about as effective as taking insulin to lowering your blood sugar. Now, you're going to be going to the bathroom because you're going to be pissing out the sugar. Instead of taking the sugar and stuffing it into cells that don't want it, don't need it, and can't use it, if you drink water, your body's going to piss the sugar out into the toilet where it can't do you any harm. And so water drinking is a huge benefit. And the amount of water you drink is about one quart for every 50 pounds of body weight. So for diabetics, it's a little bit more than it is for other people. Again, this is not medical advice. Obviously, you should talk to your healthcare provider before you even think of making any changes. But that's what I found to be really very helpful in the water department. Now, another thing we doctors are told to tell diabetics, which I believe is absolutely wrong, is to restrict their salt. Oh, don't put salt on your food. Oh, God, no salt. Salt is evil. Salt is bad. Well, when a person's blood sugar is too high and they come to the hospital, the first thing that's done is that they are given an IV with salt water in it. That's the treatment. The treatment for a blood sugar that's too high is salt water. So why can't you just drink salt water at home to prevent it? Well, isn't that an amazing idea? Salt water, which comes, even if you buy expensive water, you're talking about $1 a quart for salt water. In other words, you buy a quart of water and you put in 1 or 2 teaspoons of water, put salt in it. So a quart of water, 1 or 2 teaspoons of salt, stir it up, and you drink it down. That same quart of water given to you in a hospital via IV can run you a few $100. So $1 dose of water at home to prevent your blood sugar from going high as opposed to waiting until after the fact. So for most diabetics, once they stop eating all the processed foods, they're going to be taking in less salt anyway, so they can easily afford to add 1 or 2 teaspoons of salt to each quart of water that they drink. And that really drops the blood sugar very quickly. So you have to be careful if you're going to take your diabetes medicine. You definitely need to get some advice, some counseling, some guidance on that.
Okay, we'll take a quick break to do this and tell everybody that is listening that you're listening to the Blake Radio, and this is Healing with Dr. Daniels, and this is the diabetes debacle for today's topic. Now, Dr. Daniels, we're talking about as far as new research. Now, what could be done as far as what should be done as far as the diabetes debacle goes?
Well, I think it's really important for patients to educate themselves, to listen to shows like this, and really understand how much harm is actually being done by the therapies that that they're taking. And once they understand that, and once they really get a grip on that, then that can give them the courage to take the next step, which is that they are going to see doctors, and they can at least ask the doctors meaningful questions. And the meaningful question, how much insulin should I take, is probably not a meaningful question, because the answer your doctor is trained to give you is an answer that will cause you to have hypoglycemia and other near-death events. So that's not the question to ask. The question to ask is, doctor, if I do everything you tell me to do, am I going to reach any of my life goals? Is this going to make me sexier, more attractive? Am I going to be able to score with the girls? Am I going to look younger, have more energy, land that dream job? You know, really put the doctor on the spot. So, look, you know, I'm a human being. I have different goals I want to accomplish in my life. You know, is taking these drugs, is that going to make me rich? You know, how is this going to impact my life? And you really need to have that as your new yardstick as to whether or not you're going to take a particular drug. That's really key. So first, to educate yourself so you have the courage to ask the right questions. And then, of course, the next thing is to ask those questions. You know, doctor, where is this going? Am I going to live any longer if I take these drugs? And if he says yes, you know, you heard it here, and the research is clear that you're going to have to live at least 714 years in order to experience life extension benefits due to taking insulin or any other dietary drug. So if he tells you that he thinks it's going to extend your lifetime, and ask him how many years. Is it going to give you a day, a week, a month, a year, 5 years, 10 years? How many years longer does he think you're going to live as a result of following everything that he tells you? So that's what's important to ask the correct question, and that is the correct question. And the correct question is it going to help you have a better life? And if it's not going to help you have a better life, then, you know, you should really have no problem just saying no, just like you would say no to any of the more dangerous illegal drugs, like, say, heroin, another intravenous drug. So if you wouldn't take heroin, why should you take insulin derived from human feces? Or maybe it was cow feces. But it just doesn't make sense as a strategy for healing. So that's those two things I should do. The third thing I should do is definitely go to my website, vitalitycapsules.com, and sign up for our newsletter, and you can go to /findout, so vitalitycapsules.com/findout, and take our simple three-question quiz to see if you really are at risk of being a victim of murder by medicine. So that's what you've that's a good thing to do. And then on the mailing list, I'll be sending you an assortment of videos and even comic strips, because you really need to have a sense of humor about this, as well as you'll have access to recipes and just strategies for healing, so you can have the same benefits that other people have who followed, who left the beaten path and really followed a course to improve their health naturally. And I think that's the final strategy and the final solution.
Okay, Dr. Daniels, we have about 5 minutes left, and I want to remind everybody that you do a show every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, correct?
That's correct, every Tuesday at 6 p.m.
Okay, could you give us a little brief synopsis of, I guess, the next show, which will be October 23rd?
Yeah, our next show will be the crippling therapy of arthritis. And what this show is going to demonstrate is just how people have been offered deadly therapy for an excruciating disease that's not deadly, and that there really are other ways to relieve the pain. And I'll just tell a little joke about that. It's just kind of strip I wrote. A husband and wife are kind of sitting at the beach, I guess in a lawn chair. So he's in his lawn chair and she's in her lawn chair, and he says, "Honey, the doctor just gave me these pills for my arthritis. He says that they might cause a heart attack." And so the wife says, "Oh, honey, you're just full of shit. Take these pills." And so that kind of summarizes the whole ball of wax. And so what we're going to talk about next week is arthritis, you know, how crippling and awful it is, and just some really, really simple solutions. And, of course, can't ignore the murder by medicine, which is a homicide angle, and let people know the drugs that they're taking that are actually causing homicide. Are causing them to be murdered.
Well, for those that are listening today, you're listening to the Blake Radio, and this was another session with Dr. Daniels. And today's topic was the diabetes debacle. If you would like to find out more information from Dr. Daniels, please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your risk for murder by medicine. Also, next show will be October 23rd. That's next Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and it will be right here on the Blake Radio again. And Dr. Daniels, could you please say again about the little survey that you have as far as on your website?
Yes, it's a really, really neat survey. It's only 3 questions. It's very easy. And by just answering those 3 questions and clicking the submit button, we will send you a report to your email address letting you know exactly what your risk is of homicide or being murdered by medicine. And we have like 2 minutes left. I'd like to share another comic. I just love writing these comics. So this particular comic suggests a possible solution to homicide by medicine. This is called Another Day in the Intensive Care Unit. And the doctor says, standard of care is his only hope. He has a patient lying in bed, obviously not doing very well. He's got tubes running into him from all angles. And his wife says, this looks like a homicide in progress to me. And the doctor says, the standard of care only protects me from financial loss. But it offers no protection against criminal prosecution. I'm stopping therapy. And the wife says, thank you, doctor. And in the next frame, the patient is sitting up. He's totally disconnected from all these tubes. And he says, gosh, I don't know what happened. I had this dream that I was dying. And so these comics kind of, you know, bring out the point that you really do have the ability to say no. And I think the only recourse left for citizens really is to prosecute for murder, to contact a district attorney. Everything else is pretty much out of the hands of the patient because of technological advances. And so that's really all that I have to say, except, you know, visit us next week at 6 p.m. Tuesday, and until then, be safe and, you know, don't get murdered by medicine.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Daniels. That was very informative. And for those who listen, this is Blake Radio, and today was
Healing with Dr. Daniels, and the title of today's show is The Diabetes Debacle. And if you have a chance, visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out and fill out the quick survey that Dr. Daniels spoke about.